is what brings us together today.
Well, sort of. So let me read you an email that I got on Facebook about a week ago. Do any of you guys in the quorum have wives that are still believers? My husband is a liberal believer, but he has potential. Personally, I think he's procrastinating the day of reckoning when he takes a hard look at it all. Anyway, I'm wondering if any of you have had to deal with a believing spouse. Would love to hear experiences and tips to helping our spouses understand us. Well, you know, I think there's probably podcasts out there that do a better job of this than we would, but I thought this could be an opportunity to bring back one of my favorite new people, Mike L., who you may remember from the Secrets of Abraham podcast. And I didn't get a chance to talk to him because I was out of town when Tom recorded that. So I thought, why not contact Mike and see if he and his wife Olivia want to come on and talk about their experience, not only where he was a non-believer and she was a believer, but also, if you remember, she wasn't a member when they first started dating, and so he played a role in her conversion, and then eventually played a role in her deconversion as well. So we brought on Mike and Olivia to talk to us, and at the same time, Matt and his wife Kristen decided to jump on and talk to us a bit about their experience, and we have Tom as well talking about his experience with his wife. So that's what you have in store for you today on Infants on Thrones, with me, Glenn Ostlund, and our co-host, Tom's kid's dad, Tom.
Okay, you're listening to Infants on Thrones with my dad.
This is Infants on Thrones, philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Now that blessed arrangement, that dream within a dream.
Now, before dispensing any of our ever so wise and ever so profound infantile marriage advice, Olivia prepared a special treat for Tom and me, a listener survey designed just for us. So please, take a listen.
Is it multiple choice or is there essays?
No. Well, there's one essay and then there's some multiple choice. But Olivia, what would you think about reading those questions to Tom and I? And we'll just answer them right here.
I can do that. Let me find it on my... Hey, guys. Hi, by the way.
Hi.
Hey,
hi.
Olivia. Good to digitally meet you.
Yes. I was just having a little fun with the survey.
Yeah.
She worked really, really hard on it.
Yeah, right. That, yeah. Especially that one question, but we'll get to that when we get to it.
I thought that question was perfect.
Yeah, I know. You guys did, but...
All right. What do you think your listeners really think about your podcast? That it's awesome, because it is. That they are obsessed with the podcast and need to get a life. That they like it in an appropriate, healthy way. They don't like it, but they tell us they do because they don't want to hurt us the way the church hurt them.
What's your answer, Tom?
Wow. Like the majority. Let's see. The majority of the listeners, I would probably say they like it in an appropriate, healthy way. But I don't know. I want to answer A, but that makes me sound like a narcissist.
It didn't stop me. That's my answer. See, I thought for sure you were going to go with they don't like it, but they tell us they do because they don't want to hurt us the way the church did. But that's me projecting the Eeyore on you.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
Okay, are there any podcast guests that you wish you never had on the podcast? Yes, Krista.
That's a great
answer. And that's the only option that you gave us.
Yeah.
So I couldn't not... But, you know, come on. Really? You hated Krista that much?
No, I didn't. Okay. I didn't. Yeah.
You know, that was the one where I cringed through the entire thing on every one of them. And I still listen to the entire thing anyway. And one of them I listened to twice.
Yeah.
because I enjoy cringing so much.
Right, yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Does it? It doesn't, but you know, it brought me back to testimony meetings where I used to cringe as people would get up in front and start talking about their vacations and, you know, spouting off all kinds of stuff that probably isn't appropriate to say in front of sacraments.
Yeah, I still got fingernail marks in my palms from cringing so hard.
From Krista or from testimony meetings?
Both, definitely. Oh.
Yeah, well, okay.
I like her. I like Krista.
Glenn, I'm with you. I enjoy Krista. I think that towards the end it got a little contrived.
The end of which one? The part three?
Yeah.
Yeah, the channeling one was interesting. I don't know. It was disappointing in some ways, and then in other ways, yeah. I mean, like honestly, it made me think. Now, what would I really expect if this were real? Like, how would I expect it to sound? Like, I wouldn't know. If I was actually sitting across from the real Emma Smith, what would she really say? Would she be saying what actually happened, or would she be saying something that is filtered through her own self-preservation bias? You know, I don't know. It's just, it opens up all these weird areas of exploration for me that is intriguing but disappointing at the same time. So, I don't know. But I've got hours and hours of stuff recorded of her that I just can't bring myself to do anything with. Just because the response has been so, you know,
polarizing.
Polarizing, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But to me, there's like this kind of interesting one where I had, you know, brother Jake. I had Jake and his wife Erica over, and they were talking with her, and Jake got into all of this like future sci-fi stuff. You know, like, will there ever be artificial intelligences, and could artificial intelligences fuse with a soul and actually become like a living thing?
Wow.
And yeah, I don't know. It was an interesting conversation, but it's just weird. So,
mm-hmm.
All right.
This next question was actually Mike's idea. Mm-hmm. The question was,
all right.
Do you have a 2-year supply of food? Yes, it's wise counsel. If alcohol counts as food, then yes. No, that is weird and hoarderish. I have less than 2 years' worth, but more than 2 days' worth. Yes, and if you ever find it, I will kill you, salt killer you, and add you to it. Survivalism, bitches.
Yeah.
I especially like that last answer.
Yeah, definitely. That it's got to be the last answer. But do you do a year supply, Tom?
I have a 72-hour kit.
Okay.
But it's probably expired. I haven't gone back and looked.
That's what we were noticing about our food storage the other day, because we had this thing where if we brought some canned food to something, we got, you know, a discount. So I told Mike, you know, go get a couple of cans of food. And he's down there for like 5 minutes. Like, I can't find anything that's not expired by like 3 years.
Yeah,
We've got stuff going back to 2008. It's probably time to toss it.
So what? Why 2 years? I mean, was that the going the extra mile part of the commandment? Because it was only a year supply that we were supposed to have, right?
Is it a year supply? Well, we failed so miserably even at a year.
How long has it been?
We failed miserably even at the year supply. I think maybe we had a month supply at one point, but we never used it, and it just went bad, and we never replaced it.
Yeah.
If we want botulism, then we're good.
Yeah.
For like a long time.
Nice.
There's a lot of food down there. It's just, it's all bad. All right, next question. How often do you dream about the podcast? Every once in a while? Never, but I probably will start to now. Thanks a lot. I'm working this out with my therapist.
I would choose B, but a little bit of C.
Really?
Yeah, I don't ever dream about the podcast at all.
No, I don't. But
I wondered about that, because I often will dream about stuff that I'm doing. You know, I'll dream about work. I'll dream about stuff with the kids. And so I wondered, how big of a thing is it for you guys? Like, is it a stressful thing? Is it something you think about when you're not actually doing it? You know, so
I don't think I have ever dreamt about it either. Okay. Spirit of full disclosure, cause I'm editing it now. I recorded it last night. Guess what happened to me last night? First time ever. And it sucked. Thanks, Olivia. It's not a stress because it's fun to do, you know, so is it something that we think about? Like, I think about it a lot because I'm thinking about what could we do, you know, or I'll hear something and I go, oh, that could be a cool thing to do on the podcast. But it's never, It's never a stress.
Well, early in the Mormon Expression days, it did enter my psyche a lot more than it does now. I think I have a much better and stronger healthy boundary with mm-hmm. podcasting than I used to have. It used to be pretty bad, but now it's just kind of like, yeah. Glenn shoots me an email like, dude, would you pull your head out of your ass and help out? I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I'll help out.
Yeah, whatever. Enough of this. Let's get on to our main discussion. Okay, so the reason we asked you both on, Mike and Olivia, I got an email about a week ago from a listener who, you know, she is married. Her husband, she described as a liberal Mormon type believer. She's an ex-Mormon, former Mormon, and she wanted to know what the wife status was with, you know, the guys that are on the podcast, and if we have any special tips for how to cope with, a spouse who has different beliefs. You know, I think her question was actually, how can we get them to understand us better? Which, I don't know if that's the right approach. But so the first person I thought of was you, Mike, with your the essay that you sent in and the story that you told about you and Olivia, how you played a role in her conversion into the church. And then after a few years, you left the church, and she was the one standing there holding the family together in the gospel, and then eventually she came out too. So I thought it would be interesting to get the two of you on and address that question and see what, if anything, you might have to say about that, and just hear about that whole conversion, deconversion experience in a little more detail anyway.
Yeah, sure. So Olivia probably has a different perspective on it than I have, or than I gave it on the last podcast. But for us, it was, well, so if you remember in the essay, I spent a lot of years just going along, you know, playing the part and going to church every week. And I was a ward clerk and a ward missionary and, you know, a 100% active type paying temple recommend carrying member.
Can I interrupt real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
Hey, so I was going to just have my wife be on instead of me, give her a topic.
Is she coming on?
Yeah, she's right here.
Sweet.
Do we have to both be on, or can I just have her be on?
Why don't you both be on?
All right. Well, if I can figure out how to do this, I don't think that'll work.
Okay.
Should I bow out?
No, dude.
All right.
You've got experience here.
This is.
Well, I don't know. I shouldn't speak for Mike and Olivia. Maybe they would prefer that you bow out.
No, hang around, Tom.
Okay. Actually, right. No. No.
Boy, we're having a hard time. Like, Matt keeps dropping off of this. Matthew Long. Well, why don't we do this? Like, just talk. Tell your story. And if we have, you know, if they jump in the middle, I can edit like a wizard.
You shall not pass!
Yeah, that's fine. So, as I was saying before, I think that we're fairly unique as far, or well, at least from the people that I know, we're fairly unique as far as our story goes, as far as deconversions. We can talk about the whole conversion process from our different points of view, but as far as deconversions, I was fully faithful and faking it till the end. I, all the way up until we left the church, I never went inactive and quit going. Spent as much time in primary as I could because that meant I didn't have to spend any time in elders quorum, and spent as much time in the nursery as I could. But all the way up till the end, I, you know, played my part. And mostly it was because we had seen people where, you know, when that doesn't happen that way, the families fall apart. We've got a couple of really good friends who have gone through either divorces or are on the verge of divorce. Because one person believes, the other person doesn't believe, and they make their vocal about it. And
yeah, so I didn't know at all about anything that Mike thought. And he would occasionally sort of hint at things. And at the time, I didn't realize that that's what he was doing, because I think he was really smart about it. Like, he would say, he got a different job for a little while. And he said, you know, my new boss, he goes to this different, like, evangelical church, and he's like the nicest guy. And he, like, it's so weird, because you just normally think that you know, Mormons are so nice, but this guy is just so awesome. I really like him. And at the time I was like, that's nice. And then later, you kind of realize, oh, that was one of those things where he's trying to let me know, you know, there's other people you can, that are not Mormon who are cool, who we could be friends with.
And so, so look out when you're at a restaurant and he goes, you know that waitress over there? She is something else, you know, because
she's probably an evangelical.
I think we got his number. Yeah, right.
And then he would say thing. I think he was friends in when he was getting his degree. He was friends with this other guy who was also an evangelical, and he gave Mike a couple of books about Mormonism. And they were, you know, they were. I don't like to call stuff anti-Mormon, but these were kind of anti-Mormon. Maybe. I mean, maybe they weren't. Maybe they were, I don't know, Price or something. I don't remember. But and he brought them home, and he's like, you know, I think it'd be interesting to read these, but this guy said I should read them. I don't know. What do you think? And I read, you know, like a paragraph and was just like, this is horrible. I cannot handle this. And then Mike back off, you know, he would back off. And so it was all throughout those 10 years, like every so often, just these little him trying to just test the waters. And at the time I had no idea that that's what was happening, but looking back on it, that's definitely what it was.
So several years into it, there was one point where I got a little more brave and I made the comment. I said, can you believe that they left the Book of Abraham in the Pearl of Great Price?
Well, that was super recent. That was a couple years ago.
I don't remember that, but I remember that was right before I kind of figured things out on my own. I remember you saying that to me.
So Olivia, how recent is your journey out of Mormonism then? I mean, how long are we talking?
So I would say about last September or October.
Okay, so about a year, a little over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And how long, like from the time that you started taking the bait that Mike had been giving you for 10 years.
I wasn't taking it.
Yeah. At the time he finally got you on the hook, how long did it take for him to reel you in?
See, that's the thing, is that it wasn't him.
Yeah.
It really wasn't. What it was, and maybe, I don't know if it would be more helpful for me to tell my conversion story first.
Uh-huh.
But what it was, my kind of deconversion was that, honestly, I took a logic course in college. Mm. I'm in school right now, and I've been in school for years trying to finish up my degree and be a mom. And so it takes a long time. And and one of my courses, I had to take a philosophy course, so I decided I would take logic. And I learned how to think. And I learned that, you know, to start with a conclusion and work backwards is not the proper way to think. It's not reasonable. And I realized that that's what I had done with becoming a Mormon. I had a conclusion that this is what I needed to do. And anything that didn't fit inside of that box, I pushed it out and I buried it down. And
Without considering it at all.
No, not at all.
Right.
Not at all. And when I learned how to consider things, and I allowed myself to do that. I think that I allowed myself also to get a little bit fed up with a couple of things in the church.
That always helps.
You know? Yeah. And I think once I did that, when Mike decided to test those waters again and put that bait out there, I was ready for it at that point. But it definitely was not him.
I would agree with that for sure. So she said September or October when she was taking school classes, she started to have doubts. But you'll remember in the essay, I had mentioned that one day we were just laying in bed and she said, you know, I've got some problems with the church, and here they are. And that was December. That was several months after she had started doubting. So here she is, she's doubting on her own, and I didn't know about it. And I'd been doubting for a long time and she didn't know about it. And it kind of took just somebody brave enough to say, hey, guess what? Just, you know, straight out without beating around the bush, I have some doubts, and let's talk about them.
It's almost like that Christmas story where the woman cuts her hair and the guy gives her the thing for her hair and she gives him something for the watch that he sold to buy the thing for her hair. I don't know. Never mind.
I have no idea what you're talking
That's
about.
That's fine. Yeah. It's a terrible story.
The gift of the Magi.
The gift
it's
of
also
the
Magi. Nothing like that, Glenn.
Yes, that's right. What I was trying to do was create a segue for Matt and Kristen to jump in.
Hello.
Hello.
Matt, Kristen, you heard a little bit from Mike and Olivia talk about their experience. What was it with you guys?
Well, some of what Olivia was saying, I kind of felt the same. Matt would bring books home, and actually Matt was a Sunday school teacher for like 5 years, and every time he would plan a lesson, he would get just angry with, you know, the lesson material and how it always went back to, they would bring it back to the church, even if it totally didn't even, you know, align with, I don't know. They would always come back to, you know, follow the prophets, temple, this and that. So he was always angry planning his lessons. And this was years. And I'm like, oh, just let it go. But he would bring home books and stuff about Joseph Smith. And I kept telling him, don't read those. And then I got to the point where I was like, who cares if this is true? I became kind of the apologist. I can look over that. It doesn't matter. But I finally started having those doubts. And then my big thing, I didn't believe a lot of doctrine. I don't know if I ever did. I went to BYU, but I didn't love my experience there. Never really wanted to go to church, but I did. And then my big thing, I guess, was finally I just kept thinking, well, even if this isn't all true, it's good.
Mm, yeah.
And then I got to the point where Matt kind of would have me read more things like the polygamy stuff and Joseph Smith and, you know, his affairs with, you know, on Emma and stuff. And I just finally was like, yeah, I don't believe any of this.
Yeah.
So.
And were you raised Mormon?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, were you? Okay.
Raised Mormon. I have two sisters and two brothers that went on missions. And then there's just me and my family who didn't. So.
We're in the same boat. I've got two brothers and a sister who all went on a mission, and I didn't.
Yeah.
Everybody else still active as well.
Yeah, and it's easy for them to say, well, it's because Kristen, you know, never had this confirming testimony. That's what they all say. And I'm like, well, maybe I'm the smart one.
So the question that was posed was, you know, are there any suggestions on strategies for how to deal with, you know, a spouse who's in a different place, you know, than you are. So from Mike and Olivia, it sounds like you guys never really had any conflict because, Olivia, you weren't really aware of where Mike was until you were there, too. And so it was just joy that you felt when you were both on the same page. Is that right?
I think we did have some conflict just in terms of I was being preached at every week in church while he was in nursery. You know, I was in young women's or I was in gospel doctrine or relief society, that the man holds the priesthood and the man is supposed to be the spiritual leader of the household. And here's all the things that he should be doing. And then Mike, after many years kind of stopped and he did those things for a long time. But I think that he got to a certain point where he mentally couldn't do it anymore. It was too painful or it was too, I don't know.
So you were hearing that he should be gathering the family together and leading family home evening and leading you guys in prayers, mm-hmm. and giving blessings for all these things. And he wasn't really measuring up to that standard that you were being told he should. So you felt there was a conflict there.
I think that, you know, I nagged him about that stuff because I felt like, well, you have the priesthood. And keep in mind, too, that I, before I even joined the church, I had asked him, why don't women hold the priesthood?
Mm.
And why do I see men doing all these things in your church and women don't do the same things? And so I'm at home thinking, I don't get to have this privilege. And here he has it and he's not even exercising. He's not even using it. It's like a waste to him in a way. And I don't really think that that I articulated that well to him, because I could understand that it was something that was on some level sort of painful for him, because he's an ambitious guy. He's smart. He works really hard. He's not going to just sit back and let me do something that he could do if he wanted to.
Yeah.
So I just figured he didn't really want to do it. And I didn't question it, because I had my little box. And if stuff didn't fit in the box, then I just didn't really, I tried not to think about it.
But you had this growing resentment inside of you, kind of, or resentment, disappointment.
I think it was more of a disappointment. I don't think I resented him at all. I think it was like a disappointment in that our kids were maybe not seeing the kind of priesthood leadership that that I had been taught that our kids should expect. It's not that I had that expectation to them. It's that I was hearing this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And
he was falling short then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Far, far, far short.
Olivia, were you raised Mormon? I didn't
know.
I missed that part.
So okay. I guess I it would probably be helpful if I explained that. So I wasn't raised religious at all. When I was a teenager, and Mike, we met when I was very young, in middle school, and he moved away, and we kept in touch. And when he was living out of state, I started going to an evangelical church. Mm. And so I got, you know, I believed in Jesus and I believed in God. And
well,
I didn't
know. Not the real
know.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Not the Mormon,
I know,
Jesus.
Right? Not the Mormon Jews. I didn't know anything about Mormonism. My family knew that Mike was Mormon, and they made jokes about, you know, well, he wears funny underwear and he probably has like six moms or something. And I had no idea what they were talking about. I just brushed it off. Like, he doesn't have six moms. He has one mom, you know, he doesn't wear funny underwear. Like, and so I didn't know anything about it. And then when he moved back, he went to my church a couple times. So I decided to go to his church and see what it was like. And I'd been to church dances with him before. But that was really my exposure to it. And I had a lot of...
love church dances.
Yeah. I just thought it was so weird that they prayed at a dance. Like, why? Why would you pray at a dance? Anyway...
So we wouldn't touch each other.
Yeah.
We need the spirit.
Yeah. So anyway, I just had very little exposure to it. And what happened was my real kind of conversion, what made me realize I need to do this is, two things. I had a friend, our mutual friend told me one time, you know, it's too bad you aren't Mormon, because if you and Mike end up, you know, getting really serious, and if you want to get married someday, I mean, I think Mormons only marry Mormons. I'm not really sure, but all the Mormons I know, they're married to Mormons. And I kind of put that in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
Like, okay, all right. And then one time Mike and I visited, is after we were engaged, we visited his family, and we were just playing board games, and for some reason, they started singing a primary song, and they were like, it was beautiful. They were singing all four parts, and like, they all knew the words. It was like being in a musical.
Was it Follow the Prophet?
No, I think wasn't it Families Can Be Together?
It was something like that. So yeah. You understand, when I was growing up, my parents were both very active and very strong in the church. My dad was a much better priesthood leader than I was. And so we would have family home evening, and we would practice primary songs and hymns, and we would learn four-part harmony for everything, and, you know, the games and the cookies and the lesson, and it was... Right. Every week kind of thing. So yeah,
but I didn't know that. Like, I didn't know that they all practiced four-part harmony together. Like, to me, it was just this huge, like, very spiritual experience to see them singing this song together.
Because of the beauty of it.
It was so beautiful. And they were so close and so happy.
Yeah.
And I thought,
spirit. Right.
Well, I thought, I want this.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't really assume it was a spirit at the time, because I don't think I knew enough about, but I got chills, and it felt really nice, and I thought, I want this for my family.
So
that's when I decided I need to join the church because
so I need to take singing lessons.
This is the way.
When you joined the church, when we speculated on this last week when we did a recording, but just our survey of one. Did you know when you were baptized that if you did everything, you could go to the highest degree of the celestial kingdom and become a god?
I did know that.
Okay. I thought so. I thought when Randy was saying that last week that he was full of shit. I think that people know that in the six discussions, that you'll become a god.
Well, I don't know if they told her in the discussions. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I don't think they told me in the discussions, but Mike told me, we were talking about it one time before I really caught on to the church and started buying everything, that how could there be different gods? Like how could you become a god? Because he had told me that. How's that possible? There's only one god. And he said something which I think was really smart. He said, well, do you believe in aliens? And I was like, I definitely think that there's a possibility that there are aliens. Sure. And he goes, well, do you think they have the same god as us? Do you think that Jesus went to their planet and everything happened the exact same way? I was like, well, of course not. They're aliens. Like, they're green and stuff. Or, you know, they're...
They've got a green alien Jesus.
And he was like, well, there you go. Yeah. They have a different God. They do things a different way than we do.
Wow.
That used to be one of my favorite teachings. So I have to say, I was very disappointed when President Hinckley went on TV and said, I'm not sure that we teach that, because he took my most favorite belief, the thing that I was waiting for, and the thing that was keeping me good and on the straight and narrow path, because I was going to be a god, and kind of de-emphasized it for me. That was kind of a bummer.
So he took it away. So I want to go back to that conflict question, and Kristen, ask for your experience with you and Matt. Did you feel the same types of things that Olivia was describing? You know, I mean, Matt probably doesn't live up to a lot of things in your eyes, I would imagine.
He's pretty manly.
Well, okay, all right.
Maybe. Well, there was conflict.
There was conflict, but I will say, Matt and I've always been liberal. I'm going to call it liberal Mormons. I don't know what that means. We always went out on Sundays and watched rated R movies and, you know, drank Coke.
So you were always putting yourself at risk for being led away by the devil.
So, yeah. Right.
When I say conflict, though, it's not that we didn't have arguments, we didn't have, we didn't have fights, we didn't really dispute anything, because I learned early on really not to proselytize her about my beliefs. I would just express them. I would express my frustrations and then stop. And it was like kind of like setting breadcrumbs and figure, let her process it on her own time. But what the conflict was, I was done with church and yet would go to support her at, you know, sacrament meeting and then bail. But so we were in conflict in that we were on different places. But at the same time, I supported her by going to church, and she supported me by letting me leave early and watch football. And as a result, I would fold laundry and I would cook and I would take care of the house because she did support me in that.
Wow. There's going to be a lot of guys really angry at you for saying that.
Yeah, and this has appeared over years. And eventually I'd notice, you know, months would go by and many, many months would go by, and all of a sudden she'd come home frustrated, more frustrated with church. And it's like the light bulb did go off, and the things that they would say were frustrating her and getting to her like they were me a year before that or a year and a half before that.
So Tom, I want to bring you into this too, and I know your wife's not here to talk from her side, but like, how comfortable are you talking about where she is with the church and where she's come over the last few years, and like how your relationship is with her and that?
Yeah, I'm extremely open about it. That's cool.
Go, man.
Well, and I guess this kind of goes to the question that I've been kind of waiting that maybe Olivia or Kristen would open up about this. But for me, you know, the level of communication was a little sketchy at first, because I know, Mike, when you were talking about, you know, I tried to keep my apostasy at bay just to prevent any animosity or whatever your motives were. But for me, I kind of kept her on the same page. But I still recall vividly like two instances where the tides changed, where one, I told her I didn't think the church was what it claimed to be anymore. And I knew that that statement sunk hard, and even our relationship changed for a while after that. Even, you know, just personally and intimately and everything. Just there was a lot of walls that immediately came up after that. And the second one, which wasn't that far off of the first question, is I said, yeah, I'm not going to pay tithing anymore. I guess they're kind of related, but I think that was kind of the icing on the cake. Because she kind of felt like, well, if he doesn't believe, but if he keeps paying tithing, he can come back. But it's almost like once I said, I don't want to pay tithing anymore, the reality set, you know, really started to sit in, and it didn't go so good.
Well, that reminds me, my former sister-in-law, her husband decided unilaterally not to pay tithing. And so when she went in for a temple recommend, their bishop refused to give one to her because her husband hadn't been paying tithing for the family.
Oh, so, what a dick move. Dick move.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
But yeah, so but there's ramifications there for the wife if the husband makes that kind of a decision. So I can see why your wife would be a little upset.
Well, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of things I wish I would have done differently. And it, you know, as you go through these groups and you talk to people that have gone through similar situations or, you know, are starting to go through the crisis of faith, they always ask, you know, what would you have done differently or what advice do you have to give? And most of the time I just say, well, just don't do what I did because that was a bad move. I am glad that I kept her on the same page, but there was a couple instances there.
When you say kept her on the same page, you mean you let her know she was aware of where you were at every stage in your journey, unlike Mike, who just kind of internalized it all and, you know.
Yeah, because I was spending a lot of time at the library or on the computer, and right. She'd come in and be like, hey, are you like in a chat room talking to some hottie or something like that? And I'd be like, no, and then I'd show her, you know, I'm on New Order Mormon or I'm on, you know, Mormon Think or something else like that. And where I was, you know, when I was involved with apologetics, and she's like, I don't get this. You know, she just didn't understand my interest in it. And then when she would try to engage the conversation, you know, her eyes would glaze over like, what? Yeah, Mountain Meadows Massacre is relevant. How? That was 150 years ago. Who cares? You know, it was just a very difficult situation, and it felt like oil and water. I couldn't get on the same page for the most part, and I just kept pushing the issue, and it wasn't until I went to therapy and all this other stuff that I started to realize that I needed to back off, and I just needed to do what was best for me and keep it that way instead of like trying to push all the transformation that was going on with me onto her. Yeah. She wasn't going through that. I mean, why was it necessary for me to incorporate her into, you know, whatever transformation I was going through? And so when I backed off, our relationship took a complete 180. It was night and day. When I finally decided, well, there was a turning point where she got pregnant right after I stopped going to church and I got off the high council and all that stuff. She got pregnant. And she said, I don't know what this is going to mean. I don't know what's going to happen from here. And, she was just highly, highly emotional. And I just finally said, I'll go to church. And so I went back to church and I took a calling. And
go there.
And I essentially said to her, listen, you know, I've been a dick for several months. The church obviously means a lot to you, even if it is just socially. I need to meet you at least halfway. And so I didn't, I had a problem with it, but I wanted to show her that I was committed to her. Because
right. Yeah.
The bottom line for me is I still had strong emotion connection with her. I still loved her a lot. Even though there was like a problems communicating, there was problems, you know, spiritually with this, but.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask if respect ever became a problem for any of you in this. And you know, so as you were talking, Tom, I was trying to put myself in that position and wondering if you, like when she asked you the question about Mountain Meadows, because I know how important that is to you, that when you hear somebody say, why is that even a big deal? Like, does that diminish your respect for that person a little bit? You know, and if those issues start stacking up, do you start respecting your spouse less? And then, of course, in like Olivia's situation where she's hearing all these things that Mike should be doing and isn't, does she start to respect you less? And I mean, to me, respect is so key to maintaining a healthy marriage. You know, if that starts to go away and all the resentment stuff goes in. So I was just going to throw that out there. Respect. Anyone?
I definitely didn't respect Mike any less for his not wanting to do church stuff or, you know, church stuff at home.
Yeah.
He did things when I prodded him. But I've always known that Mike is his own guy and he's going to do what he thinks is important. And I also felt like maybe at the time I wondered if maybe he just felt that it was okay for me to take the lead on these type of things, that it was okay because I was naturally more spiritual maybe, or because I was more interested in it or better at it or, you know, whatever. Like, so I did, that didn't even come into my mind at all. Personally, I don't know if he tried to bring things up with me about the church and I dismissed them, if that made him like you were saying, Glenn, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think there was any loss of respect from my side. Obviously Olivia was doing everything that she was supposed to be doing. I was more worried about her losing respect with me, but I didn't know that she had taken it that way, but I'm actually glad that she had taken it as I'm just letting her take the lead because she was the more spiritual one. She used to, once in a while, she used to say, well, let's pray about this. And so we would both pray about something and she'd say, so how do you feel? I'd be like, I didn't get an answer. And she'd say, well, I feel like this. And so she'd tell me, and you know, that happened multiple times. And so I am happy that that didn't damage our relationship aside from the occasional small dispute here and there.
Yeah.
And I never lost respect for Matt, but there were times when I would question myself or be a little bit scared. I knew Matt was always, you know, reading and questioning, and I loved that about him and his mind. But then, you know, you're told from such a little child, don't question. So there was times where I was scared, like, well, I figured, you know, I'll be the strong one. We'll just ride this out. He'll be fine. But then I would be scared. He's questioning things that we're not supposed to question. And then I'd find myself questioning him, being like, yeah, this is kind of bullshit. And then, but we're not supposed to question this. So I think it was more my, not even ever against Matt, but more like kind of turmoil in my own self. Yeah. But I never blamed it on Matt or, you know, that makes sense.
To the respect question, though, Glenn, I did lose respect for my wife when she would just out and out dismiss, you know, some of the things that I was learning or, you know, some of the differences that I was pointing out to her in the gospel. And, you know, when I really felt like I was doing my due diligence on something, like the Mountain Meadows Massacre, where I felt like I was understanding it. You know, I read multiple books. I felt like I had a really good understanding of it. And she would just be out and out dismissive of whatever I brought to the table, yeah, I would lose respect for. But mind you, you know, I was an arrogant asshole. You know, I was only looking through my own set of eyes, and I wasn't taking her perspective and where she stood into consideration at the time. I just felt like she needed to understand me. Gosh dang it, why isn't she understanding me? You know, she probably was, but I was so forceful that I wasn't giving her the room to do it on her own. You know, I was like force feeding her.
Yeah. To me, it's difficult. You know, because I was married for 17 years and then divorced for 2 and then recently remarried. And, you know, so when I think about respect for me, like in my first marriage, respect was definitely a problem mutually for us in a lot of different areas. But as as things started changing in my views of the church, that became an issue, especially when I would see on days when we're getting ready to go to church, and we're supposed, it's supposed to be this wonderful, edifying thing that we're doing, and it's like, everybody get out of the house! Good! Good! And it's like the worst experience ever, and I'm like, hey, stop. Look at what you're doing. You know, like, that. Can we approach this another way so that we actually have a spirit of peace in our... And it was just like, don't you question me. Don't you... You know, like... I mean, so there were issues there. And then on with my remarriage, you know, I actually met my wife on LDSmingle.com. You know, after trying these worldly dating sites, I tried a Mormon one and found someone who had very similar views to mine, which... When she told me her story and talked about the things that she did, like she was in nursery in her ward, and she couldn't stand going to sacrament meetings, so she just wouldn't go. I had so much respect for her when she said that, you know, and she would stop by Starbucks on the way to church, and I couldn't help but have respect for that. And even... A couple weeks ago, she was thinking, oh, I'd kind of like to try to go back to church and just see how it feels. And so we went to this ward here, and she, like 10 minutes in, it was fast and testimony meeting, she turned to me and she said, I can't take this. I don't like that bishop at all.
Oh, I know, it's like murder.
Yeah, but the bishop was especially, like, judgment. I mean, just like one of the... Anyway, but I respected her for that, you know, and so... To me, if it was like the other direction and it was like, oh my gosh, this is so wonderful and so edifying, and maybe it does go to your point, Tom, about my own arrogance, but I just would look at that and go, I can't, I don't know. I don't know how to separate myself from that issue with respect.
I can totally see what Tom is saying about the bigger issues. Like, you know, Mountain Meadows, that was something I didn't even know about until I started listening to Mormon Expression.
Yeah.
And if I were to bring up, so, you know, Olivia said she took a logic class and learned how to think. And if I was to bring up anything like that where, you know, logically, that's horrible. You know, how could anybody possibly be okay with that or just blow that off and say, no big deal. I think I could lose respect for a person like that as well. But for us, it was... Olivia was living the gospel, and I can't lose respect for somebody who's just doing what they're taught is the right thing to do.
Right.
So I have a question, quick question for you, Tom. So you said that you wouldn't change the fact that you were open with your wife, but then you also talked about how many problems that caused and ended up going to therapy. And why? What is it about being open with your wife that was beneficial?
Well, I can look in hindsight now. See, we're still together.
But that's not always the case when you're open with your wife. See,
no, you're absolutely right.
Matthew and Kristen, right? I hear Matthew and Kristen talking, and it sounds like they followed pretty much the same path we did, where you kind of keep things to yourselves, or you at least stay on the same page, and you know, you focus on family and focus on your marriage because that's the most important thing, and then religion comes second. And it seems to me that you kind of went a different route, where I've seen marriages break up due to something like that.
Well, we were on the edge. There were some times where I wasn't sure it was actually going to work out. But it wasn't until, I don't know, I feel like the tide turned when I finally decided that I was going to negotiate with her, that I was going to back down, and I completely stopped talking about the church. And I guess part of it was my involvement with discussions like on the podcast and stuff like that, that gave me the outlet instead of me always harping on my wife all the time. I think that was helpful. And, but once I did that and I went back to church and she started to see that, you know, she meant this much to me, that I would put myself in a very uncomfortable or in a position that I didn't want to be in for her. I think that made a difference, because eventually, you know, I don't know, maybe 6 months or a year, she finally said, you mean a lot to me too. If you don't want to come to church every week, that's okay. Or if you don't want a calling, that's fine. And she's in a place now where she doesn't even ask me to go anymore. She's like, are you going to be going this Sunday? I was like, I went last week, or I haven't. Right now I'm kind of on a hiatus. I haven't gone for almost a month. So and she's totally, totally cool with it. And so we're in a pretty good place right now. I guess that's how I feel about it, is I feel like I lucked out in a lot of ways, because it could have easily gone the other way. We could have easily split up easily, but some careful choices on her part and on my part too, we made it work.
Well, that's good. Go ahead, sorry.
Oh no, I was gonna say that I kind of, there's a part with how Mike dealt with everything, keeping it just totally under wraps and just kind of faking it for what, 10 years?
Well, not quite 10. That was the beginning of the doubt, but the, mm-hmm. Yeah, probably 6 to 7.
Yeah. When I found out all that, there was a part of me that was like, that kind of sucks. Like, it kind of felt like, are you being dishonest, or are you being just are you doing the most absolutely kind thing that you could have done?
Yeah, see, that's what I was gonna ask. Did you feel a sense of betrayal? Like, why did you feel like you couldn't tell me about this?
I think I did feel that, but then when I kind of explored it more and thought, honestly, how would I have reacted if you would have been totally open? I would have lost it. I would have flipped out. I can guarantee it. And I think he knew that. I think he knew that, not necessarily that we would have broken up or anything like that, but that it would have caused so much stress on our marriage that to him to just shove all that down, that's what he needed to do. And I think that it was a really a great gift. And towards the end, like right before I kind of... like we talked about, kind of deconverted or whatever you want to call it. It really, I could tell that it had been starting to really, really get to him to keep all that inside and to keep going through the motions. And I'm like, it would have been so hard. I can't imagine doing it for that long, but I look back on it and I think, no, it's not a betrayal, because we're happy now. We're together. Like we got beyond that. And I think that, Tom, like you were talking about how if you don't have, you needed the podcast and stuff to outlet. If I didn't have him to outlet through with all of this, that would just be really hard,
Yeah. What would you have considered your outlet? Just the fact that you were on, you would go on trips and explore other churches, or you had friends. What would you consider?
I think my biggest problem was that I didn't have a big outlet. So I did okay when I was in the nursery. I was all right. I didn't go to gospel doctrine. I didn't go to elders quorum. And actually, I pretty much enjoyed church. I really liked hanging out with the 3-year-olds. It was a blast. And they released me from that calling. And I have to say, I cried the day they released me from that calling, because I knew whatever was coming wasn't anything that I would enjoy nearly as much. And they made me a ward clerk.
Oh.
And that was when things started to really go downhill. But for me, I think that my problem was that I didn't have an outlet. I spent a couple of years severely depressed, where I just felt like I couldn't relate to anybody, and I didn't have any good friends. And even my own wife, I couldn't talk to my own wife about things that were bothering me, that were on my mind, and that I thought about 24 hours a day. And I had a really hard time. I wish I would have had an outlet. I think that if I would have had a podcast or something to vent through, that would have been helpful. But then at the same time, that would have sort of, opened the can of worms, and Olivia would have known exactly what I thought, because she would have listened to the podcast, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. So. There's no way that I would have not snooped around with that.
Well, so, that's what the anonymous blogs or the message boards like New Order Mormon and some of the other ones were so important, because you could be anonymous, you could vent, you could get other people's perspectives. That was the outlet. But then you didn't have to have those conversations with your wife, at least my wife, that bothered her, at least to the degree that I wanted to have the conversation. She wanted she was okay with me expressing a couple things, but didn't want to kind of belabor the point. So that's those online boards were such a, for me anyway, just a godsend, as it were.
Yeah.
So Matt and Kristen, we were just talking about being open from the get-go, and it sounds like you guys were both pretty open with each other. Is there advice that you would say, yeah, you know, for couples that are going through this sort of thing, to be, is it important to stay open and keep the lines of communication open? Or is like what Mike and Olivia went through, where Mike kind of kept his disaffection on the down low for a while? To go ahead.
Well, I think being open is important to a degree, but know your spouse and know what maybe you should keep back and not talk about. So I would always disclose, but my disclosure was, it was always in piecemeal, and it was always to a less degree than what was in my mind. So what I would process in my mind.
Oh, no. Matt, you there? You're glitching out. You still there? I can't hear you. I don't know if you can hear me, man.
No.
What the?
No.
Oh?
No.
Well, you're coming like, through like glitches where we can hear noises, but not.
If you were like a robot, we would totally put you, would give you to the Jawas. You'd be in like the Jawas little robot garbage heap with the little. You're out. So I've got kind of a hypothetical situation here. I don't know how to raise this. Is the problem ever what the problem is, or is the problem really just the awareness that there's a problem? Maybe that's the way to pose the question. So let me give you a specific here. If Mike is doubting the church, and that's going to be a problem for Olivia, is it really a problem if he carries those doubts very nobly himself and never gives her any indication that he has them? And so it doesn't disrupt their relationship at all. Like his doubting, his disaffection hasn't really created a problem. But if he's open with her and she doesn't want him to doubt, then there's a problem.
I think that's a really good question. And my answer to that from just my perspective is that's what he did do.
Right.
And it still was a problem. Because I could tell that something was wrong, and he's a pretty good actor. Like he can roll with the best of them. And I
Shakespeare there, Mike.
I just knew that something was up, and I would ask him what's going on.
So then he'd be evasive, and it would make you question even more.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, so I would be evasive. She would say, "So what's wrong?" And I'd say, "Oh, you know, I just need to go to the gym more. I just got a lot of stress. I've got to go work out more and, you know, get all my aggression out. Or I need to go, you know, scream with my band for a while and then I'll be."
Work's really stressful, or the kids are stressing me out, or, you know, just excuses. But it's like, well, it felt different. Yeah. It felt different.
There was a point where she recommended that I go on some medication or go see a doctor or something. I said, no, I can take care of it myself. I'll just go to the gym an extra time every day and, you know, get aggression out before I come home.
Okay.
And maybe there's some people that can have those doubts. And I don't think even for that point, it probably wasn't doubts for Mike. I think he probably just had come to conclusions.
Well,
much stronger than doubts. And maybe there's some people that can do that and handle it and just be cool. But I've never met one.
So I had this conversation a few hours ago with my wife, and she wasn't very happy with it. Because to me, it was just like a hypothetical, theoretical question. Because I started thinking about an incident that happened with my brother and his ex-wife several years ago, where he was smoking a substance that is now legal if he was living in Denver, Colorado. Well, actually, he's living in Seattle, so it's legal there too. But it wasn't at the time, and she hated that he was smoking it. And they would fight like crazy. And so he told her that he stopped. And their relationship completely improved. And for 2 years, they were the best that they ever were. And what she didn't know is he was still smoking it. But he was just keeping it completely away from her, totally hid. And it got to a point where he got a little cocky. Because their relationship was so good, he thought that he could introduce this again. And, you know, so he tried, and when she found out not only that he had been doing this the whole time, but that he had been lying to her, you know, then the shit hit the fan, and the 2 years of bliss dipped even below where it had been before. But so when he told me that, I started thinking, you know, like, is the problem really the smoking? Because obviously he was doing this for 2 years. It didn't affect who he was. It didn't affect the way that he interacted with her. They were great while he was doing it. It was just when she knew about it and she disapproved of it that was the problem. And so I was trying to draw a parallel, wondering if there was any way to bring that into this conversation here with the beliefs. But you shot that down, Olivia, because...
Well, no, I see what you're saying, though. I definitely think that you have a good point. The thing is, though, is that with the gospel, you made promises to each other in the temple. And if that's a really big deal to one person and it's not to the other, it doesn't matter if one person is lying about it. That's in essence that you're breaking the covenant then. And so as soon as the other person knows about it, it has to be a problem because that is the covenant. Like it is, that's the essence of it, is that you're honest with each other and you're both believing and you're both keeping those promises.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because my wife, you know, her level of belief, while it may not have been to the same level as I was on, you know, on the conservative or the more serious level, she still told me one night, she said, you know what this means is I'm not going to be with you forever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I kind of got to a point where I'm like, you know, a lot of the mirrors and stuff like that, and the fog had been removed, and I was like, forever? Nothing lasts forever. What are you talking about? And, you know, in her mind, she was still on that page where she's like, you just took everything that I visioned after this life away from me. You know, and now that temple marriage that meant so much to me, you're taking it to a till death do us part. And that's pretty heavy.
Yeah, it's a big deal when one of you completely believes the whole afterlife deal.
I think it might have been easier if I would have just taken a crap on the bed, I think. Because I think...
It's not too late to try it. It's not too late to try that, Tom.
Okay, good. Don't take that off the table.
Let us know how that goes.
Look what I left for you. Yeah. I figured it'd be easier to talk about this than anything religious.
I have a question for Mike. I wanted to ask Mike this for a while, but I haven't really, okay. I don't know, found oh, time or whatever. Did you think once you knew about the church, like the truth or whatever you want to call it, when you looked at me being a believing Mormon, did you see me as being sort of brainwashed-ish? Like, could you see that coming out?
No. Well, so, you know, we didn't actually start, both of us didn't start researching a whole lot of the stuff until we were both on the same page. And so I didn't know about, you know, I knew about, yeah, five or six little problems. I didn't know about the majority of the stuff. I didn't even know the extent of Joseph Smith's polygamy. That's just not something they discuss at church. So the things that I knew were, you know, fairly small, and they were, I don't know, I guess if you can call the Book of Abraham, I know that I go back to that because that was kind of where it all started for me. But if you can call that fairly small, but to me that proved Joseph, at least at one point in time, was a fraud. And at least at one point in time, could no longer prophesy. And I knew that Emma had left his church after he had died and gone off, you know, remarried and joined a different church. And I thought, boy, that doesn't say much about you if your own wife is willing to give up this thing that you died for. I just had some serious doubts about Joseph, and that led me to serious doubts about the whole truthfulness of the church. But as far as you believing things, at that time, I still believed in God. I still believed in Christ. I still believed in, you know, a lot of the core concepts of the gospel. It was just, I didn't believe it was the only true church. I didn't have any faith in Joseph at all. I didn't believe in the Book of Mormon. But as far as the stuff that they were teaching, I couldn't have said one way or another if I believed that priesthood was really a real thing or some imaginary power that they give you.
Well, I'm just curious, is like, if you saw me as like being under their thumb, you know, like she's not thinking this way or doing this because rules, 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 obedience, obedience, obedience. Because that's how I see myself. That's how I think I was. But I was just curious if you,
you know, maybe saw that. Maybe you were, but I think that when you're a Mormon, they pound into you so hard that these are the things that are important and these are the things that are going to make you happy. They call it the plan of happiness, right? They mm-hmm. say these are the things that are going to make you happy for all eternity. And, you know, you go to church and you look around in testimony meeting and people look miserable and you just think, well, yeah, you know, maybe they haven't perfected that happiness yet. But
yeah.
I thought it was an honest attempt on your part to live the gospel, to be happy. You hear that your whole life. Well, you had heard that for more than a decade. So I didn't see you as brainwashed or duped or, you know, completely, you know, just following their, you know, obeying blindly, I guess. Mm-hmm. I just saw you as trying to push our family in the direction that the church said was an important direction to go. And at that time, I didn't agree with all of it, but I had a lot less problems with it then than I do now. So it was easier for me back then.
Well, and my guess is that, Mike, you knew the parts of her conversion experience that were important to her. You know, that picture-perfect family that mm-hmm. she wanted, and that's kind of what the church was doing for her. So it might have been a little easier to forgive her, I mean, if that's the right word, but to forgive her obedience and brainwashedness.
But, you know, and that's a strong term, but I don't know what else to call it, honestly.
Right. It might have been partly that, but, you know, there was a part of me that actually wondered if it was me, because I would talk to Olivia, and she would tell me that she was getting answers to her prayers, and we would pray about things, and I would, every time, without fail, not get an answer, never got an answer, and but she would always come back and say, you know, I feel really good about this. Or, you know, she'd talk about feeling the Spirit, and she would get up in testimony meeting and talk about how she knew things were true, and that was something that I never did. And thought it was just me.
Well, it was, because the Lord had prepared some really great things for you, and if you would have gone on your mission, you would have gotten answers to prayers.
That's what my patriarchal blessing says, actually. So
I know. I know.
Yeah, Glenn wrote it.
Yeah, right.
Ask him.
His patriarchal blessing tells him to stay off of drugs.
Yeah, it does.
Over and over and over. Word of wisdom.
Yeah.
Oh, see, we gotta have. I know. A patriarchal blessing.
So got mine. So, man, I'll be happy to share.
So, she asked earlier today when we think about the podcast. I was having this very thought today that our next listener feedback survey needs to be questions around patriarchal blessings. And then we bring that in so that we can do like a little comparison, like, does your patriarchal blessing tell you that you'll be in the morning of the first resurrection? You know, like,
stick
what,
Ephraim,
what
stick
tribe are
Ephraim,
you from? You know, like we need to think about it, how we would do it. But yeah, we need to do some patriarchal blessing, something or other.
And then maybe we could bring Krista on and she can tell us if that really would have happened if we had stayed faithful.
Now, I talked to her about patriarchal blessings. I don't know if that made it onto any of the things that I put in.
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Remember that.
Yeah, I talked to her about patriarchal blessings.
Not that I pay that close attention, but
yeah. Yeah.
I don't mean to go back to Krista, but I have to say that my favorite comment she ever made was the one about how she saw black snakes in Monson's stomach.
Oh, right, yeah. Tom was on that one.
Was that the same one?
Yep,
that was great. Yeah.
I was still bummed out that she couldn't tell me who was going to win the NCAA tournament.
I was about to go there. That was one of my favorite comments from you. Your questions. It was like this lull in the conversation, and I'm like, Tom, you got anything to say? Yeah. Who's going to win the NCAA tournament?
Well, that,
way to
I
put
mean,
it in perspective, man.
Because we could put a cap on this whole psychic thing if she would just name it.
Why is it, though? Like, why is there the assumption that if somebody is picking up on, like, spiritual voices, or, you know, like, if there's some, like, higher-level spirit guide kind of thing, that they can predict the future accurately?
Because they're the ones saying they can.
Really?
That's not the same thing.
I don't think so.
Not really the same thing, is it?
I don't think so.
One's the past and dead people, and the other is, like, you know, Professor Trelawney in the future.
She was the one. I don't remember which one. And mind you, this could be something else, but I'm pretty sure she said that time means something different on the other side. So
yes, I remember that.
Past, present, future's all one big blah, blah, blah.
Well, she said she doesn't know, but she gets impressions of things.
Whatever.
She gets impressions of things that, like, she doesn't know. Is this going to happen in the future or what? You know,
but that
wasn't my question. I'm like, what is it on our end that makes us assume, you know, and here's another question I've had about this whole psychic thing as I've thought about it. I kind of touched on this when we were talking about Emma Smith. If I'm talking to you, Tom, and I'm asking you about specific details in your life, are you going to remember everything? If I ask you specific things about you, are you going to give me the right answer?
You know, like how many personages you saw, whether or not you were attacked by Satan, whether or not you had to start a church, you know, small things.
Tiny things like that. Well, but I mean, that's a good example because, like, say you've got Joseph Smith, then you really can channel Joseph Smith and you ask him, hey, Joseph Smith, tell me what really happened. Like, do you expect that if he was alive sitting across from you and you asked him that question, he would give you that answer?
Not until I built a relationship of trust.
Oh, right. Yeah. Built on common beliefs and asked direct will you questions. Yep.
Exactly. Well, I mean, but she, and I don't know if she meant it sarcastically, but she said that me and you were married. And that you were.
Right. you were chasing me around with the broom.
Yeah. Did you ever follow up on that to find out if that's how she really felt?
No.
Okay. Because now it's this long running joke that I always got to dispel. I'm like, no, Glenn was my bitch back in the 1800s.
yeah, back then. How the turntables have
turntables.
All right.
Sorry, that was a tangent.
Well, I think
Glenn's the editing wizard here, so it all
goes in, is what happens. So. All right. Is there anything else that you guys wanted to cover that we didn't?
Yeah. How about this, Mike and Olivia? Did you guys did your marriage get to a point where you considered marriage therapy, or was that even on the table at all?
It was no. I don't think we ever discussed marriage therapy. We had a couple of fairly big blowout fights, and I couldn't even remember now what they were.
They weren't about church.
There were a few, a couple that were started just because of my general negative attitude in general. Because I was miserable, and that would lead to it. So, you know, it stemmed back to the church, but they weren't about religious topics. I would say therapy. I couldn't say if therapy would have helped or not. I think you make a good point, Tom, that you know, you guys are where you are at, and you're glad that you were open. And I wonder sometimes if I was open and honest about the whole thing the whole way through, if we would still be together. And I think that we would be, and I think that the reason why is because Olivia wasn't Mormon her whole life. So she had seen things beforehand and seen that there were good people outside the church and seen that there were good experiences outside the church. And I think that even though she would have had a really hard time with it and may have blown up, I don't think it would have been the end for us. And maybe that would have been that might have been a better way to go. I'll never know.
I think too that we would have been okay just because our relationship was not something that stemmed from Mormonism. We didn't meet at BYU. We didn't, I don't know if that has a lot to do with it, but I just feel like we had our own connection before any of this stuff came up. And I think I could have honestly looked back if I was pressed as a believer. I could have looked back and said, yeah, I joined the church because I felt like it was the right thing to do, not because I had this overwhelming testimony. I think that I gained that testimony. I think that I gained an understanding and I gained a sort of a knowledge of something that I wanted to believe so badly that without all the correct information, yeah, I believed it. I really did. But since our relationship wasn't based on that, I think we would have been okay. But I honestly think that how it worked out for us is definitely the best possible outcome. And I can't speak for Mike. I'm sure that was really hard to do for many years. But where we are now, it's so much better. Even when we were both happy in the church, I feel like it's so much better now.
I think...
we're richer now in our relationship. We're it's a deeper level. We've gone through this together, and we can be ourselves around each other.
That's you know? Really, really great. You hit on something that reminded me of something my wife had said while we were going through the ugly times in our marriage, where she said, you know, I love you outside the church. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and it's like what you said, where you guys had a connection that wasn't directly influenced by the church. And I think me and my wife are lucky that way. I know some couples, you know, the church is so interweaved in their marriage that if the church gets unplugged, then the marriage dissolves. I know mm-hmm. that's the case in a lot of people, but for whatever reason, I lucked out with my wife because we built an emotional bond that didn't necessarily, include the church, I guess.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, I know people that have had, they got married to someone because they had a blessing that they were supposed to marry that person. And when that kind of thing happens, if somebody loses their testimony in that marriage, it's like, what does that even mean then?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's scary.
So I got to ask you this, Glenn, turning the tables on the host.
Yeah.
How big of an influence was it between you and your ex-wife? Your disaffection, the church, was that, I mean, I know, because I know you well enough that it wasn't a big, big factor that led up to the divorce, but maybe throughout your marriage, did it even get brought up? Stuff like that?
Did what? Yeah.
The church, your disaffection, blah, blah, blah.
No, I mean, it played a role. I mean, it couldn't not play a role because the church was so central in our lives, you know, but like there were times, and I think I've talked about this on maybe the Voices interview that Heather did with me, but there were times when we were at really low points and I thought, okay, look, we need to turn to the Lord in prayer, you know, because we had this discussion last week about liberal Mormons and the things that we chose and the things that we rejected. But, you know, I always felt that there was power out there to tap into, like this divine power kind of thing, and that it, regardless of how real it was, it could be a source of peace. And so I thought, let's get down on our knees, humble ourselves in this way, and pray, like pour out our hearts, the things that we want, and have that be a way for us to become closer. And I meant it very sincerely. And you know, so we would pray and say amen, and it was like I had to force her to do it. And I wasn't like using my priesthood authority or anything like that on her, but it was just, you know, like I'm like, let's pray, and she's like, ugh. So we'd sit down and we'd pray, and it wouldn't do a damn thing. I mean, it would have zero effect. And you know, then there were nights where, like, just the relationship was so awful, I would lay on the side of my bed and like the hymn, "Where Can I Turn for Peace," would like torture me. It's like going through my head.
Wow.
And I'm like, there's nowhere I can turn for peace. Like there's nowhere I can turn for peace. I can't like kneel and pray for peace. You know, like we started off in early on in our marriage praying with each other, you know, every night. And it just got to a point where I'm like, this is stupid. We don't even like each other. We, you know, like the things that we're saying, it's just bullshit. And so
you wouldn't like, do the little passive aggressive stuff. Like, I sure hope that my wife starts to love me a little bit this week.
Yeah, no, because as soon as it would start getting to that point, it's like, you know, this is stupid. And neither one of us would do that, you know? So it's just, we might as well not do it than to do that. So yeah, there were things. And you know, like when we lived in Japan for 3 years, I stopped going to church for a while, and I would go to sacrament meeting, and kind of what Matt was talking about earlier, I'd go to sacrament meeting and then I'd come home. I didn't do the dishes. I didn't do laundry. I just, you know, went home and I'd watch The Sopranos or something. But you know, I know that was difficult because she felt judged. You know, she felt like she had she was a part member family. And the attention that she had.
Judged by other members?
Yeah, judged by other members. And even if it was like a very you know, kind-hearted. Oh, we need to fellowship this mm-hmm. family more so that we can bring the part member husband back, you know. But it was a source of embarrassment to her, I'm sure.
Yeah, but on the flip side, because my wife has gone through something like that as well, where she's like, Sister Perry, it must be so hard for you.
Yeah.
Essentially,
right.
You know,
yeah.
Because you're... Yeah. You're not only a mother of three kids, but
yeah.
your husband.
And well, she's definitely milked that, and she got the ward in the divorce. I mean, I'll put it
she
that way.
She got the ward in the divorce.
You know, she can have them.
Yeah, she got.
I know.
She got
that's
that right.
What I was going to say.
So that was a big sense of sympathy and validation for her. But you know, we. Oh, there was one other point I was going to make. It's funny because early when we were first married, I was much more of a believer than she ever was. And I remember things like polygamy I'd bring up because my position, and this was when I was a student at BYU, and I, you know, was aware that polygamy had happened. I didn't know the extent of it. I didn't know polyandry. But I thought, hey, this is what God commanded. So you do it. If God commands it, you do it. There must be something that we as mere mortals aren't, you know, we're too petty for something like this, for like the celestial law of free love. We're just too petty. You know, I could maybe the same mentality as,
for
you know, Jay,
love.
The swinger.
Yeah. Did you just throw free
one
love
way
and
free
polygamy?
Love, maybe.
Yeah. Like the celestial free love where everybody's sealed to each other, you know,
free
and
love,
like,
yeah.
Hey, you are just as sealed to your wife as you are to your grandma. Think about it. So
no, yeah. I'm not going to think about
it. Don't think about it.
Yeah. Think about it. So, you know, we would have these kinds of conversations and like, you're nuts. You know, that's not what that I can't accept polygamy. And I'm like, wait a second. So you think that Joseph Smith just made that up? She goes, yeah, that wasn't God. I'm like, whoa, how can you even be a Mormon? How can you even be a Mormon? You've got to accept. Like, how can you think that Joseph Smith didn't do it? You know, so I was totally cool with it for a while. Why wouldn't
well,
I be?
Yeah, that's the problem. She's a woman, and you're a man, and your end game was, listen, babe,
hey,
if things don't work out.
What did I say? Petty human emotions, like jealousy.
Yeah, exactly.
Those don't exist in the celestial kingdom, man.
Sure they don't. Sure
no.
They don't.
It's all good. I've got to put on some like groovy music in the background when I edit this. Yeah. So it was a contributing factor in some ways. And as far as therapy goes, we saw five different therapists over a span of maybe 4 years, and the first one of those was an LDS social services guy that was just absolutely worthless, and we both agreed, and so we went to other like non-church member professionals. She didn't like the second one because she was convinced that she was a lesbian, so she didn't want to hear anything that she had to say.
Like she was hitting on her, hey baby.
I don't think she went there. She just
that
she,
doesn't
she,
make any-
no, but she just thought she doesn't share our values, so she can't give us good advice.
Oh,
it was
boy.
That. So yeah, but yeah. So there was a lack of respect in a lot of different areas. There was, you know, going in different directions, seeing the world very different ways, and the church was part of that.
Well, all right. If that isn't the closest thing to an actual wrap-up, I don't know what is.
Okay. Well, too bad we couldn't have Matt and Kristen on to finish their story.
Yeah,
but
it's too bad. Well, right. I know sometimes you ask for a final thought, so I was just going to say, you know, you started out this whole conversation with, you know, you had an email where somebody was asking for advice on what do you do if you and your spouse aren't on the same page. And I would say since we kind of looked at things from two different approaches, Tom with a more direct approach and Matt kind of in the middle and me with just repress it all until you explode.
You didn't explode.
I didn't explode. I would
we
say I don't.
Stop short of that.
I would say I don't know which approach is the best approach. I'm not sure that there's any one approach that works for everybody, but I would just say make sure you put your family and your wife first, and or your husband, and then make the church be second so you can make sure that you're all together when you come out of it one way or the other. Because I mentioned in my previous, in the previous podcast, in the essay one, that I would have gladly. Not gladly, but I would have faked it for the rest of my life if I had to, just to keep my family together, because that was my priority. And I think that if people make that their priority and they look like Matt did and say, well, you know, I know my spouse, this is how much she can take and this is how much I can get away with saying without really, you know, pissing her off. You know, keep marital harmony at the forefront and, you know, do whatever else you have to do to keep the peace in the home, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's my thought.
Yeah, and I think her question was specifically, I'm looking at it right now, wondering if any of you have had to deal with a believing spouse, would love to hear experiences and tips to helping our spouses understand us. And so I don't think that there's really a way to actively do that. I mean, from what I heard from you guys, even Tom, where you were keeping your wife on the same page, you weren't actively trying to get her to understand you. You just had to make that choice that, you know what, this is what you want, I'm going to give you what you want. And then she kind of came around and was more open to you. But I don't think she's ever come to you and said, help me understand how you're seeing this, Tom. Has she ever done that?
After a while, yeah. But after I gave her a ton of room. And I guess to answer that question, it's important. You know, there's like this human desire for all of us to want to be understood. You know, I want people to understand where I'm coming from. I want people to understand what I've gone through and why I do the things I do. But in a marriage, for me, what I didn't realize at first, and I had to learn the hard way, is for my wife, for that to happen, I needed to understand her first. Yeah. I needed to give her the room, and I needed to take myself out of my own shoes and then see where she stands and why she was acting that way. And it took a little while, but she finally, because I still recall this one moment where she's like, hey, because I'd been forcing her, quote, forcing her, because I would preload podcasts on her MP3 player when she'd go out to exercise. yeah, there's a nice tactic, Tom. Way to go there, buddy. And after a while, she stopped listening to it. And then I just completely stopped talking about it at all. And then out of the blue, she came and she said, hey, I listened to your interview with Will Bagley. I'm just, without me saying a word, and it just, without me saying a word, and it just floored me. And I just, whoa. And then she wanted to talk about it. And then she wanted to hear my experience about going up and seeing him. And what did we talk about off the mic and blah, blah, blah. It was... And after that, there was like this mutual foundation that started to get built up where she started to gain an interest in me. And then it was like that need for me to be understood started to be filled. It wasn't on the same time frame that I would have liked it to be, but it came around. And I don't know, it was still worth it. I mean, my wife's the best. I love her a lot. So, yeah.
So I guess don't push and wait till they're ready to talk.
Yeah, and just remember, remember what the main goal is, right, is to love each other. It's not to make sure you go to sacrament together every week. That's really not that important in the grand scheme of things, is it?
Right, and a lot of times, if your need to be understood is weighing heavy on your heart, maybe just try to understand your partner. Mm-hmm. And maybe they'll pick up on some of those signs and cues and see, wow, my spouse is really, really interested in me and my life, I ought to return the favor.
Sure.
And if you're able to do that, four-part harmony, families can be together. You've got advice.
Oh, man, it's been about 20 years.
Yeah, right. You just don't want to sing a Mormon hymn. Admit it.
Well, yeah, you got a point. That's probably
I don't either.
You're on your own.
All right.
Solo for Glenn.
I can do my own four-part harmony. Like I said, editing wizard.
Right. So
I could turn it into a ringtone like that guy from The Office. Who was that?
Andy Bernard.
Drew. He goes by Drew.
What's the George Seinfeld one? The greatest American hero one?
Yeah.
Love that one. I've told myself for years I wanted to get that as a voicemail, but I never did.
Not too late, man. You do that right after you crap on the bed.
Can I do it at the same time?
You could.
I'm a multitasker.
Right.
cool. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, and thank you, Mike and Olivia and Kristen and Matt, for joining as well. And, Tom. All right, Tom. So, we talked about a lot of different things. It may have gone on a little bit too long. You may have gotten a little impatient, but...
Man and wife! Say man and wife!
Fine. Anyone for the closing prayer?
I married Joan. What a girl, what a world, what a life. Oh, I married Joan. What a fine love is blind, what a wife. Do-do-do-do, Gideon Gay. She keeps my heart lapping, never know where her brain has flown.
I had this awesome, it was my most recent hypnagogic hallucination. It was so funny. So I'm laying in bed, and then I'm paralyzed again, and like a supernatural demon comes into the room again. And you know what thought went through my mind? It was like clear as day.
Shake his hand.
No, it was, oh my God, the paranormal is real. I have to be consistent with my beliefs and change my belief that the paranormal is real. And then I snapped out of it, and I was laughing hysterically.
Yeah, so can you have like morning wood when you are paralyzed like that?
Can you not?
You know, I'm scared shitless every time I'm paralyzed, so I don't think that I've got a hard-on.
You're not worried about that?
It's just like and a even, body
and if he did start getting a hard on when demons were coming, then I think he'd be in therapy right now.
Oh, I got total gay attraction to demons. I mean, they are hot. They're the bad boys that you want to change. Change them.
That's going to be the perfect Easter egg for any episode in the future.
Oh my gosh! Wow.